It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Way and Jeff Howe with you. Clean up from hour number one. CB talking about those sports injuries. I remember all the pec injuries one season at Texas.
Jackson Jeffcoat was one of those.
Somebody said that's not what he meant by the real one. Real one is in badass. I got to talk about the KD thing.
So there's
that. Somebody said, still real to me, says Stoner. And your favorite texter, pooped 11 times in one day, is his handle. Says the Jack of the Crack, as he calls them, 99-cent tacos were amazing after a night of heavy, heavy drinking. So that's something to keep in mind. All right, second hour of the program, the NCAA Baseball Super Regionals are officially underway, and the first game has started in Nashville, where the number 4 overall national seed Vanderbilt is playing the 13 overall seed East Carolina. The Pirates are batting in the top of the first inning. So if we're talking baseball and other things, that we're very pleased to be joined by my broadcast partner for many, many years. Then he went off to the Chicago Cubs. Then he came back, and he does an outstanding job at Longhorn Network, and he's going to join me this weekend, and that's a win-win for us on the Super Regional. Keith Moreland is with us. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. It's nice to have folks. See if I can get this a little closer.
There you go.
It's nice to have folks at the ballpark.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? And to be get out and do something. I went and saw Rob Baird last night at Saxton Pub. How about getting out and going to listen to live music? Rob is always good. So, but you just look at it. It is going to be super fun to, first of all, be at a facility that is at max capacity, and to be at the facility that here in Austin into the Super Regional.
Absolutely. Hey, Jeff, pull out that rookie card there.
I got to show this. Yeah, throw it in the Google machine.
Because there's a couple of stories here. This being a Friday, Jeff always breaks out a new pack. You know, what do you call this when you do that? You say
let's do a pack break Friday.
Pack break Friday.
Yeah, on baseball card packs?
Yeah, yes. I've got some 2020 Topps Heritage High number. That's after the right. Craig, you'll remember this. That's after the 1971.
Oh, I love those cards. I was collecting
style.
Now.
And then the 2021 Heritage. That's in the 72.
Remember those? Style. Collected those.
So yeah, Keith. So we had a debate. And by the way, shout out to Brown Eye Clothing. BrownEyeClothing.com. See the lid right there. 20% of their proceeds go to colorectal cancer awareness charities in and around the greater Austin area. 45 is the age they recommend you get your first colorectal cancer screening. So, guys, make sure we're taking care of that. But, Keith, so we had a nice debate. What is your rookie card? And Craig and I were like, it's got to be, 81, Topps or Fleer. Well, actually, didn't know this until I researched it a while back. Burger King issued, it was a special Burger King issue of the 1980 Topps. And that, Keith, I got to say, that is one hell of a rookie card right there, sir.
Well, I got to tell you that I've got about 30 or 40 of those. And, yeah, that was the first one I ever saw. It came out in about the middle of the year. First time I saw one, I think, to be honest with you, I think we were in St. Louis. And I would, because in St. Louis, the teams always stayed right beside Old Busch Stadium. I mean, you were right beside it. So there was no team bus. So you walked over. So you had to walk sort of through the fans and somebody came up to me and showed me his card. I had never seen it before. So it came out in the middle of 1980, in the middle of the year. It's the first time I'd ever seen on a baseball card. Of course, they took pictures of you in 79. Should have made that team in 79.
My wife had 14 games.
Yeah. My wife and everybody broke. Went with the club. Supposed to be going to Philadelphia. No, that didn't happen. So it ended up going back to Oklahoma City. So, but one thing good about that, Oklahoma City was about 2.5 hours from home. So, if you're going to be playing in the minor league baseball, it might as well be close to home.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember what you did in your one game in 78? I just noticed there you appeared in one game in 78, 14 games in 79.
Yeah, 78. I appeared in the last game of the season. I was on deck about five different times to pinch hit throughout the month because, you know, expanded rosters and everything. You know, the guy in front of me never got a hit. You know, skip one hit and I'd get another at bat. Faced Kent Tekulve late in the game. Pittsburgh was trying to finish second. You know, back in those days, it may not be as important today as it was then. But to players, you finish second in your division, you got a check at the end of the year, just like going to postseason. It was like, you know, you got second place check. So they
really?
Were trying to finish
second place in the East.
Yeah, you've got a second place check. There's no question. And so it was important to for them to win that game because they would finish ahead of the Expos. And so, I mean, we had clinched the championship the night before the Phillies had. I mean, I say we. I was there for a month but didn't play. And the unique thing about it is when I got into the game, Danny Argsirk said, hey, you're going into the game to catch. We were facing the real thing. I mean, Omar stole a base on me.
Omar Moreno.
Yeah. So they were trying like crazy to win, and it ended up going 10 innings, and we scored in the top of the 10th, and I think, or something like that, or top of the ninth, and I think we won the game by one.
Wow. Okay. So but you didn't get an at-bat. You just went in defensively?
No, I had an at-bat. I think I got two at-bats in the game. As a matter of fact, I was 0 for 2.
Okay. All right. So the reason why I brought all of this up, too, with regard to the Cards, and this ties us back into college baseball, and it's so vivid, and you and I made so many trips to Omaha together, and it was I think it was our first one. It was either an 0-2 or 0-3. And we parked at Rosenblatt, and we're walking up through the parking lot, up that side parking lot where you go into the media entrance, and you were just besieged by two or three people. And I was like, wow, really? Okay. And one guy walks up to you, and he opens a three-ring binder, and he literally had, I think, three full sheets with, like, nine cards on each sheet.
Yeah.
All of them were various and sundry Keith Moreland cards. And he wanted you to sign every one of them.
Oh, yeah. Well,
how many did you sign for him?
I signed two pages and looked at him and said, I'm going to do these others. If you'll come back tomorrow, I'll sign the others. And Craig knows the next day he was sitting right there with not only that page, but another page.
Yeah,
he did.
And you said, I'll sign this one.
I'll sign, you know. So, you know, it is unique. You try today, no matter where you move, where you are, wherever, they find you.
Yeah.
And I understand it. It is a business, and I understand that there are people that really enjoy it, and it is a lifeblood, and they're not going to sell anything. It's not really for sale, and those okay, I'm okay with that. The ones that are making money off your signature sometimes.
Those are the ones you said, I'll sign one when a guy came up to you with a
stack. You look at them, and you just look, that this is I mean, you're this is going on the internet this evening after I get through signing it. At that point, that's when you're starting to say, no, I'll give you one.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Shady characters all around from all businesses.
Okay. All right. So the Super Regional's underway. Before we get to Texas, let's talk about what I guess it's the left side of the bracket. It is the 1-4-5-8 side of the bracket. Arkansas and NC State and North Carolina State won the Ruston Regional. I know it surprised and impressed some folks. Arkansas got pushed. Yeah. By Nebraska, and of course they play in Fayetteville starting late this afternoon. What do you?
Yeah, I like Arkansas, but I will tell you this: in my opinion, I thought there were two really quality baseball teams in the ACC, and I think that's Notre Dame and NC State. Now, I think the overall league strength was not great. I mean, I don't think it was by any more, not what we're used to seeing out of the ACC. Because Pittsburgh was a good team that didn't get in. Boston College at certain times during the year played really well. But I like NC State to push them a little bit. I think Arkansas wins it in two, but I think those will be interesting games. I don't think those will be blowout baseball games.
Keith, were you surprised how much Nebraska was able to push them? Because I think Nebraska, with the Big Ten playing conference-only schedule, I think Nebraska might have just been one of those teams that not a lot of people really knew what they were about.
Yeah, it what was impressive about Nebraska and what I think we'll see long-term is they had four of what my chart showed, you know, getting some information from ESPN, they had four guys coming out of the bullpen. They're all 93, 96. Yeah. So they had guys – now, that being said, a lot of them had struggled to throw strikes. I think in that regional they threw strikes. Mm-hmm. And I think that really shows up. You know, you see guys mature, come along. So I think long term, I think Nebraska is always going to be, for me, it's going to be the cream of the crop of the Big Ten. I mean, I just think they have some history there. They can draw kids out of this part of the country, especially North Texas. Mm-hmm. And so they can get them to Lincoln. And, you know, I've always felt like that was a really good job.
Will Bolt, what he's done.
I do. I think they're going to be around for a while. Now, can they compete and get to Omaha on a regular basis? I just don't know if any Big Ten team can do that on a regular basis. Now, they're throwing money at it. I mean, Jeff, there's a lot of these schools that have spent more than $50 million. I mean, you look at it, when you look at the Big Ten, I think there's six of them that have more than $50 million on facilities.
Minnesota with their baseball.
Yeah. So, yeah, you start throwing that kind of money, they're going to want response. They're going to want wins.
That's what, you know, Keith, that's kind of one thing that just talking to some Texas fans or fans of Southeastern teams or teams in the South. It's not just college baseball is not a game where you've got a handful of schools that are putting money into it.
Yeah.
Everybody's pumping money into it. Everybody wants new facilities because they see, I mean, I think we're going to look at the ratings numbers for the regionals and the super regionals and even the College World Series, and it's going to be good. And ESPN's back in the tournament. So there's more money now to be made in college baseball than ever before. But you got to spend money to make money.
Yeah, you do, and it's still in some of these places going to be lost leaders. Put it this way: you got a beautiful facility in Champaign-Urbana, in Illinois. You know they got a brand new facility. Well, in April or late March, trust me, I played in Chicago for a long time. It is cold to go to the ballpark, so you're just not going to put people in.
Right.
You know there is going to always be this push too to move back the College World Series to the middle of the summer. Man, that was a tough one for me because there's so many great summer programs out there, and you see guys get better when they go to the Cape or go to the Northwoods League or go out to California to the Woodbat League in California. So you're going to take that away if we start playing the College World Series in the middle of July or late July.
To say nothing of the draft.
Exactly. But Major League Baseball needs to move the draft back. I've said that for years. You've heard me say that.
And so you're glad it's in July this year.
I do. I think that's when it needs to be done. Give them a month to negotiate with the player. That's a month. That's a month's worth of time. You should know by that point, hey, is this guy signable or not? And within a month, get to the number. And if he's not capable of being signed, he's got the chance to go around the school, and here we go.
Yeah. The other side of that 1-4-5-8 is the 8-9. And that starts in Lubbock today, where they're going to have triple-digit temperatures. They're saying first pitch at Dan Law Field at Rip Griffin Park will be at 102 today. It's going to hit a high of 106 when Tech plays Stanford.
Yeah, I did hear the humidity is down a little bit, so the actual feels like temperature is going to be under 110 at the start of the game.
Oh, that's good.
How about that? I think Stanford melts in this. You know, I tip my cap to Tim Tadlock, and I think any of us that cover this, you've lost an All-American center fielder. You've lost two starting pitchers. Now, one of them had really not proven himself to be the front line yet, but is anticipating being. Mm-hmm. And you lose a guy out of your bullpen, and you lose a guy at third base that you thought you were going to get, and all of a sudden they're in a super regional. So it's just you tip your cap to them. They've done a good job, and they are very difficult to beat in Lubbock in a super regional. That is just so true. I like Stanford, very young, an offensive club. How many times have we said that about Stanford? Not very many. It's been catching defense. They play the style that Augie used to play. But they're a young, pretty good offensive club. This is one of the better offensive Stanford teams, but very young. Four freshmen make very big impacts, true freshmen on that Stanford ball club.
The 4 versus 13 is underway. As you mentioned, Vanderbilt's batting in the bottom of the first with a runner at first and two down against East Carolina. East Carolina is looked at in the same way that I think folks have looked at Dallas Baptist. They're so close, knocking on the door to get to Omaha. They haven't been able to break through. They've gotten close. But this is a tough draw for them.
It is a tough draw. You know, the last time I had East Carolina in a super, it was in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. So East Carolina, I've had them a couple times. I had them at South Carolina.
Yep.
Both times they dropped games where you really feel like, I mean, they dropped series and didn't get that punch, that ticket. And this is a tough draw, but just because of the two pitchers. Vanderbilt is not a great offensive club. Let's just be honest about that. But, boy, they put two guys out on, you know, today, Friday, and Saturday, they're going to put two of the best arms in America out there. So when you have Rocker and Leiter, you feel pretty good about it. Hey, score me one, and we got a chance to win.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of their 2014 team, the team that won the title, that had Carson Fulmer and Walker Buehler.
Absolutely.
Now they had Dansby Swanson, but he still wasn't a wall banger. He was a creator, but they don't have a lot of guys who are real explosive, as you mentioned, offensively. They got those two big 1-2 guys.
Yeah, they do pretty good. And the other thing is that they don't bunt very often, but they'll hit and run. They'll run a little bit. They'll do some different things. And they have some guys in the lineup that can hit the ballpark, but they're looking to score three. With those two guys on the mound, they score three, they're going to come away with the W.
Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, the winner of that Super is going to line up against the winner of the one in Tucson, where you've got Arizona and Ole Miss, which I think can be a little bit fascinating here. We thought Oklahoma State might be able to thrive in that hit, and it just didn't happen for them. UCSB. Santa Barbara beat them a couple of times, but this is a good Arizona ball club and a good Ole Miss ball club that can also knock the ball out of the park.
Yeah, and they're playing in a ballpark in High Corbett Field that the ball just gets out of there and just flies out of there. Tucson is about 3,000 feet above sea level. People don't realize that. Ball carries. It's a lot like Atlanta. It's hot. There's no humidity, and you got altitude. We're going to see some runs in this series. There's no question about it, and I think Mississippi has the ability to have more pop up and down their lineup. This is my upset. On that side of the bracket, this is the one that I have not been sold, and I think you know that. I have not been sold on Arizona.
Or for that matter, really, the Pac-12 much,
well,
have you?
Oregon State proved to me that even though they didn't have big number one guy pitching.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty good from top to bottom. They had some pretty good arms, and they were a grind it type baseball team. But even their head coach, and Darwin Barty's a friend of mine. You know, I knew him for Cubs. Talked to him a couple times. He said, "Hey, you know, we got to this point, but we should have won our league. We were better. We're a better team than what our numbers showed at the end, and they almost got it done."
Yeah. Well, to his point, Arizona State took two out of three from them in Corvallis.
Yeah.
And that Arizona State team just wasn't up to the level of Texas. But and for that matter, even Fairfield when they played them in the last game.
Not one of the better Arizona State teams we've seen.
No. And that's why Tracy Smith's out of a job.
Yeah.
That's a gut feeling. I just think, and not that I'm jumping on the SEC, I just think that Ole Miss, that's not a good matchup because Ole Miss can hit the ball at the ballpark. They are an offensive-based club, and they're going to an offensive ballpark with altitude.
Okay. We're going to look at the other side of the bracket coming. Obviously, you get Keith's thoughts on the Super Regional between Texas and South Florida. We'll continue here with Life the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Tuesday, I feel better. Even my own man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes too slow. I'll have Friday on my mind. Gonna
have fun. Yeah, we got Friday on our mind today. And the start of the Super Regionals, Vanderbilt and East Carolina scoreless to go to the bottom of the second game one of their Super Regional series. Later this afternoon, Texas Tech at 2 o'clock hosting Stanford. Game one in Lubbock. After that, it's also around 5 o'clock this afternoon in Fayetteville, Arkansas at home against North Carolina State. Tonight at 8 o'clock is Arizona, the 5 seed against Ole Miss, the 12 seed. They play game one in Tucson. Keith Moreland, our special guest during this portion of the program. So that's the left side of that Super Regional bracket. Let's talk about the right side. And I'll start at the bottom of the bracket with the 3-6 matchup. I know you've really thought Tennessee's been an outstanding ball club all year long. And the Pulmonary Farewell Tour just continues. Oregon was a team that I know you didn't buy during the course of the year. You continued to say they shouldn't be a top eight. You weren't buying them. And then LSU goes out there as the 3 seed and wins that region.
Yeah, but I'm not sure, guys, that they do that without what took place at the SEC tournament when Paul announced his retirement. Mm-hmm. I think it's gave that team a boost. There's no question about it. I think that boost runs out here. I think Tennessee finds – I think just watching them and what they've done, they have established themselves. They believe they can win. They are a – I don't want to say complete team, but they are one of those teams that if they have to, they'll go out and pound it with you. If they have to go pitch it and win a game 2-1, they've been able to do that too. So I really like them. That
you like Tony Vitello too.
I coach, do. Right? And so I look at that, and when I just look at Texas, let's look down the line, just step down the line. If they both take care of business, for me, Tennessee is the team on that side of the bracket that gives me – the most angst, is that the word?
Yeah, the biggest concern.
I would have my biggest concern. I really like this baseball team, and I like the way they played. They have been a team much like Arkansas that they have just steadily been there from Jump Street. They have just been very sound from Jump Street, and they've had just talking to some of the other guys, talking to Chris Burke a little bit. He said, they've stayed injury free as well. So I like them. I like their baseball team.
The two most fascinating super regionals out of this, I think, are the ones we're about to get into next. The 6 versus 11. Well, the 6 isn't there anymore. TCU is gone, and Jim Schlossnagel's off to Texas A&M. And so you've got Dallas Baptist, which won that regional. You've got Virginia, a 3, which won in Columbia, and they're playing the Super in Columbia. You and I remember 10 years ago when Dallas Baptist played Cal and Santa Clara because neither one could host. Here's DBU back in the Supers for the first time in a decade, and they're playing at another off-site situation.
Well, they're playing at an off-site because the NCAA said, hey, these are the 16 sites, and this is where these are going to be hosted because the protocols in these particular places, because it was not only just money that was important to the NCAA awarding regional bids and hosts. It was also protocols. And so we were told last week, I particularly did that TCU regional, we were told during the week that it would either be in Fort Worth or it would be in Columbia.
And Fort Worth, TCU was not interested, were they?
No, they were not interested in handling the second round, and Columbia stepped up. A lot of that has to do with the fact is who the athletic director is at South Carolina. Let's just be honest.
Ray Tanner making his presence felt there. Yeah. By the way, since we're still on the subject with TCU, nobody was surprised to see Jim Schlossnagel go. I know you were even talking about it weeks and weeks ago that you could see that possibly as an impending move to College Station.
Yeah, I thought College Station, and then when Paul Maneri did what he did, that is also because Jim's got some background in the state of Louisiana as well. So I thought that there was a real possibility he would move. I think the Aggies got a really good coach. I think that they've got a program. Any of us that have gone over to Bluebell and watched a game, been involved in the game, what an incredible atmosphere. I mean, that's a program ready to explode. And Rob Childress did so many good things there, and his excellent coach just couldn't push through. Couldn't get over that hump, and couldn't really get done what they were expecting to get done. So, they went and found their guy. And we'll see how Jim does there. It will be an adjustment. Here's a man that has lived in Fort Worth for 18 years, a half a mile from the ballpark is where he lives. He walks back and forth to work. College Station is going to be a culture shock from Fort Worth. There's just no doubt for he and his family. It's just different. Not that it's not good. It's just different for where he's been for 18 years. So it'll be different. So it'll be interesting who gets that job. Does he take his assistants with him? There's the question too.
Who do you like in Columbia?
I like Virginia, and I wouldn't have said this any other way except the first baseman and the center fielder both are out. The 3-4 hitters for Dallas Baptist. Mm-hmm. Now they say they're day to day, but when you move, I saw one. Well, HIPAA laws, I can't. I know what it was, but it's in his side of his back, and that is one that you don't recover from. And the other one hit the corner of the bag, and his ankle blew up about just size of a basketball pretty instantly. I doubt it either way. Cole Moore and Chase Grady, when you lose your 3-4 hitters in the middle of your lineup, it makes it very difficult. I now I do like Dominic Hamill, their right-hander. I think he will be tough in that opening game. And if DBU wins that opener, then they're very much in it.
Yeah, okay. The other one that I find fascinating is the 7 versus 10 is Mississippi State hosting Notre Dame in Starkville. And I know you haven't bought Notre Dame a lot this year.
I haven't bought Notre Dame, and
they were pretty impressive last week.
Yeah, there's no doubt they've scored runs. They look a lot like Texas. I mean, they were putting up runs all over the place. In fact, 26 or something against Connecticut.
Yeah,
Notre Dame. When you look at them, very sound team, but nothing jumps off the page. And Mississippi State. What jumps off the page is every single guy that comes out to the mound is going to throw 94 to 97. They just have tremendous arms. And in that ballpark, I think this goes Mississippi State's way, but I put it this way. I will watch if I have the opportunity to sit and watch some of that game. Because I want to see, again, I've only seen Notre Dame on tape. I have not really seen them live, and I've looked at their numbers. But I've just talked to other people in scouting and that kind of thing. I'll be interesting to see the team personally, but I'll take Mississippi State. I think that would be one that could go 3, just because I don't know. I think the one in Tennessee. I think Tennessee will. That's a 2. I think the Dallas Baptist is a good series, and if we get to Texas, Texas is a favorite. There's no question here in this ballpark.
Which brings us to that, which also brings us to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
Okay, so before the Jeff with the notebook stuff, we're at Texas now and South Florida in your analysis.
Well, first of all, you got a South Florida team as confident as all get out to they're a team that wouldn't be here. I saw this from a team that I just saw in Dallas Baptist. They got confident late. They want to get a conference tournament, get that championship. Then they go on the road to one of the tough places to play in America. You go to University of Florida in Gainesville, and they just eliminated quickly 2 of the best teams that we thought would come out of that regional. So they're a confident team. They're not much over 500. What we know is that they have some guys that can hit the ball at the ballpark. Their starting pitchers don't walk a lot of people. They average more than a strikeout per inning, so they have some velocity. So they have some guys that can do some things.
And they don't small ball much.
And they don't. They're not going to bunt. They're going to play 3 guys in their lineup with double-digit home runs. They don't steal many bases. What we do know is they're confident, they play hard, and they're playing on borrowed money. And anytime you play a team
on house money,
anytime you play a team like that, anything can happen. So that's the scary part. From the Texas side of it, just do what you've been doing. I mean, go throw strikes. Catch the ball. They catch it as good as anybody in America. Offensively, they had a really good series. There's no question. Can he keep that going? You'd love to see him play a game against somebody on Tuesday this week just to keep that, because hitting is so contagious, and you'd like to continue to see live pitching. Sometimes these gaps in between times hurt, I think, at this time of the year. But we're fixing to get to a point where you play on a regular basis because you're going to play 10 or 11 times. If you play well in Omaha, you're going to play a bunch of games. So I like Texas, and I like them too.
You know, it's funny that you bring this up, the deal about guys hitting and hitting being contagious. I was looking at the numbers yesterday. And everybody's fixated, and rightly so, understanding on what Zach Zuby has done and what Antico's doing at the top of the lineup and what some of the – I didn't even realize, look, Trey Faltini has a 9-game hitting streak right now.
Yeah, Trey is all year long. For me, it's not the number of hits he gets when he gets them. I think he's had some of the bigger hits throughout the season.
He and Hodo.
Yeah, I tell you what, man on second base and 2 outs, you're not getting a better at bat than what Doug gives you.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that, quite frankly, may not have been out there on a regular basis other than an injury to Austin Todd.
Yep.
So, but he stepped up, he filled that role, and now he's a guy you got to count on. He's, again, 2 outs, man in scoring position in a tie game. You can. All of us have our favorite guy. You want this guy to play.
Correct.
Well, the guy that's been the most productive and the guy that gives you the quality of bat every time there has been Doug Hodo.
Mm. Ready for a little notebook action, Craig?
Absolutely.
Let's go.
Bring it.
All right. So, got a question on the Specs text line. I heard Arch Manning is working out at Texas today. What's the scoop? There is no scoop. There is no hidden agenda. This visit has been lined up for a long time. It's his first visit to Texas. In case you've been under a rock, Arch Manning, son of Cooper Manning, nephew of Peyton and Eli, grandson of Archie Manning, probably going to end up being the top quarterback in the country in the 2023 class. And, yeah, it is realistic to say he is a legitimate target for Texas. What Steve Sarkisian did at Alabama got them in the door, and now that he's at Texas, AJ Milwee, we talked to Mike Roach a couple weeks ago, Craig, about this. AJ Milwee's done a heck of a job on this recruitment. So it's a massive visit weekend. You've got official visitors coming in the 22 class. You've got unofficial visitors. Cole Hudson, the offensive lineman out of Frisco, probably your most notable in-state guy on an official visit. I'll tell you an interesting one to keep an eye on in terms of visitors this weekend. Sebastian Cheeks is a linebacker out of the state of Illinois. Was thought to be leaning towards Notre Dame at one point. It sounds like Notre Dame's kind of taking a backseat in this recruitment. Things aren't going well on the Michigan end of that deal, and I heard some stuff in the last few days that there was kind of a camp visit that went awry, that maybe Michigan did some mismanagement there or kind of misplayed things in terms of getting some FaceTime with him. Texas might be in the driver's seat going into the visit, so this is a really big opportunity for Jeff Choate and Pete Kwiatkowski to bolster that linebacker group in the 22 class. And Arch Manning is one of the unofficial visitors this weekend in the 23 class. Reuben Owens, a running back from El Campo. Craig, I know you've gotten familiar with him on the Scoreboard show. Jonte Cook from DeSoto, their talented wide receiver. So a lot of big-time visitors. Mike Roach, Dick Harris will be all over it this weekend at Horns 24/7. Let's wrap up this five-star conversation. We talked in the first hour about Chris Hummer, all the data he put out at 24/7 Sports in terms of studying 24/7 Sports composite five-star prospects since 2008 and what the hit rate is for those guys. I went down the guys. Again, only one of those guys for Texas. They've signed 14 that are now draft eligible. Only one drafted in the first round. That'd be Malcolm Brown. Only three of the 14 were drafted. Other than him, that'd be Jordan Hicks, Malik Jefferson, Caden Stearns. Injuries playing a big part of that, and we know coaching turmoil, scheme changes, all that stuff plays into that. But you got your good. Steve Sarkisian's going to have four of those guys, four five-star prospects on his roster. One of those guys, I don't think there's the three of us sitting here, anybody listening, I don't think there's any question to say this offense probably going to be built around Bijan Robinson in 2021 and probably should be built around him. Feel like, again, if he's got a clean bill of health, that's not an issue. Sark will figure out a way to get the most out of him, and that's probably you're looking at your next high draft pick. I know running back can be a difficult thing where you talk about the NFL draft, but the future is very bright for Bijan Robinson. Jordan Whittington's a guy that, again, we talk about injuries. If he can stay healthy, that being the big if, there's no question he's got a role and probably a prominent one in this offense. Third guy, B.J. Foster, again, a guy that played really well as a true freshman, probably shouldn't have played at points during his sophomore year as bad as that shoulder injury was. But this is a guy that I really think if Pete Kwiatkowski can get him to buy into his defensive philosophy of playing a little more positionless football, moving guys around. Look, if you don't want to call yourself a linebacker, don't. Just understand, look at the guys he's had at the second level. A lot of those guys fit the profile of a B.J. Foster that end up playing in the National Football League or getting drafted high. Think of a guy like Shaq Thompson, one of those type guys. That's what B.J. Foster can be if he'll buy into that. I'm not saying he'll go in the first round, but we can see more of the B.J. Foster we saw in 18 this year than what we've seen the last 2 years. And then, Craig, a guy you and I both saw, and I was against Jatavion Sanders playing offense. I thought, no. This guy with his frame.
One-handed catches notwithstanding.
Stick him at defensive end. Let him rush the passer. He can be a millionaire. He'll figure it out there. But watching him catch a ball one-handed, watching a guy, what is he, 6'4", 230, burn off on a defense, 80 yards on a bubble screen, I'm like, yeah, maybe throw him on offense and see if he can figure it out, see if it works over there. We know they're going to try him on both sides of the ball. To me, in addition to health, it's all about what side of the ball he finds a home at first and then developing the skill set there, because he's talented enough to be an impact player on either side for you.
No doubt about it. He's something else. We'll be back to wrap up today's and this week's edition of Light the Tower here on the Horn.
It's Friday. I'm free again. I got my motor running for a wild weekend. It's finally Friday. I'm out of control. Forget the working blues and let the
It is finally Friday. Keith Warren was a George Jones fan.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I still like him.
Yeah, after all these years. Keith was just telling us during the break, because we're talking about Jeff and opening the cards. Did you
my latest
packs?
Obsession. I did. Got a couple rookies from that 2020 Heritage high number, and nothing too special in the 21 Heritage.
Yeah. And Keith was just letting us know there are 123 different cards of you.
Yes.
In baseball.
Yes. Right. And because during the time now, guys, we had four companies. You had Fleer, Don Ross, Topps, and there was, what was the other major one? I'll think of it in a minute. So it'll come to my head. But, I mean, so during the 80s, they were each one of them was putting one out for you. And then I got traded, you know, once. So you're going to have two from 1 year. And then
I was going to ask you about
that deal.
If you have
four companies doing it, they're all both going to do it in 1 year. So, and then certain cities, you know, you had 76 put some out in Philadelphia. You had Pepsi did some cards, you know, the giveaway cards. I did some promotional stuff for Pepsi in Chicago when I was playing for the Cubs. So they put some cards out. So there's just 123.
Guys, I'll show you my favorite Keith Moreland card. You ready?
All right,
for this,
yeah.
Craig? It's from the 87 Donruss set, and I love those Diamond Kings cards, the illustration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love those cards.
With the illustration
That's the only one I've gotten blown up to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have to admit, it's a pretty cool card.
Now, what did they do when you got traded? There were two in two different uniforms? How did that
yeah,
work?
Yeah, there were all three companies, or all four companies had one that came out in spring training, and then I got traded, and then their second batch, they had me in another uniform.
They either put out later in the year, it's either a high number set or a traded set.
It's amazing how they did so many different things. I mean, baseball cards were amazing. I never, as a kid, picked it up because, I mean, I was such a huge fan of Mickey and all those things during the 60s, and they were out there, and sure, I had pop. But I put them in my spokes of my bicycle for making engines, you know. I never thought about keeping them.
You know what's crazy, guys, is I heard this the other day. So, obviously, one of the kind of hallmark cards in the hobby is that Mickey Mantle 1952 Topps. I didn't know that Topps started out as a gum company.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And used the baseball cards to try to sell gum. If you're a gum company and it was the same gum that I was getting in packs when I was a kid, no wonder why you weren't selling gum, because the gum was terrible. But you know what? You know why that Mantle rookie is so valued? Because Topps had excess stock of those 52 cards. They dumped all of them in the Atlantic Ocean whatever they didn't sell. They didn't store them. So that's why there's only, I think, in the what's called a mint condition for the Mickey Mantle card, I think there's only like 10 of them that exist. Very, very few.
Yeah. Well, Keith Moreland had a unique autographed item from Mickey Mantle.
I do.
Very, very baseball. Tell that story here for
you. Well, I've had... There's a couple reasons when Mickey. I went down to see the Astrodome when it opened.
April 9, 1965.
Closing out.
Weren't you a bat boy for it?
Yeah. And my fourth grade teacher was Mrs. Adair, where her husband was Jimmy Adair. He was the first base coach for the Astros.
Yeah.
So I got in down there, got going. I got to meet him, say whatever, and he signed a ball, and he spelled it K-I-E-T-H. And I said, that's not me. You know, I wasn't old enough to figure out that nobody could figure out how to spell Keith, I before E except after C or something. And so years later, I got to play golf with him, and I brought this out, and he looked at it. He didn't say much. We went on, played the round of golf, had a lot of fun talking to him. And when we got through, he walked over with me, and handed me another one that spelt right, said Keith. So
that's awesome. That's good as well. Hey, I didn't have a chance to even ask you, because we talked about it so many times over the years, working together on Longhorn football games, your thoughts on this proposed thing to go to 12 teams for college football playoff.
Oh, I tell you, I was listening to y'all earlier. I got to tell you, if you go to 12, only thing I'm saying is you better guarantee me two slots for non-Power 5s.
Yeah,
that's just the bottom line. If you go to 12 teams and do it, you have four that sit on the side. I don't buy this notion that there's too many games. I don't buy that. But if you're going to have four, they're going to be waiting on these other eight to give you four teams. Two of those other eight in my opinion, have to come from a non-Power 5 to make that work.
I think this gets more in that territory of Craig's magic number when you get to 16, where you just can guarantee if you're a conference champion, regardless of what conference it is you're in this deal. And then you save the rest for at large.
Well, Jeff, I just feel like those guys are getting some of this money.
Yeah.
They deserve to be involved and talk about that. It can't be – I mean, we get to where there's only a certain number of teams that can win it.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking out so many teams that can't. Give everybody an opportunity. There should be a path to win. There's a path in baseball. There's a path in basketball. Yeah. You're a conference champion, a Division I conference champion. You're going to get a path.
I do wonder – they do have 12, but I wonder if this is maybe the one chance you've got, if you're that group of five, to save this from the Power Five, the autonomy conferences, completely at some point just breaking off and going doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And leaving the rest of FBS to have their own deal.
Well, they need to have a little of that money.
Yeah.
They've got to have a little of that money. That's the only way they can survive. Hey, we got to have games in September.
I do think, though, Keith, what this does for the group of five, the good thing is when you start talking about non-conference schedules, now you've got an incentive. You can be rewarded for scheduling a Boise, a Cincinnati,
absolutely,
a Memphis, to where they don't have to just load up on FCSs because nobody will play them.
That's exactly right. I think you're going to force them, but give them an avenue.
Yeah.
To give them some type of guaranteed avenue. Hey, if we're one of the best right here, I mean, it's 16. I'm okay with that. If you came to me and said 16, and all right, then after that one, that's eight. That's an extra game. Then there's only eight teams that are going to have another game.
Yeah.
And then after that game, there's only two teams are gonna, or three teams, four teams are going to have the next game. So you're not running up 16, 17 games.
All right. Hey, appreciate you coming by today.
Oh, I enjoyed
this, and we'll look forward to the weekend. Hey, nothing says Longhorn postseason baseball like a full house, mid to upper 90s temperatures, and the Rot Rally going on, right, with the motorcycles.
Oh, yeah, when they're coming by. You're absolutely, and you got Gnarls Barkley singing "We're Crazy" at the same time.
And you two in the booth calling the game the way it should be.
We're looking forward to it.
It will be fun.
We'll be on the air at 7:45 tomorrow evening from UFCU Dish Falk Field. First pitch is at 8 o'clock. Thanks so much to John Reichel, who will be at the switch for us tomorrow night on the baseball broadcast. Thanks for John stepping in there for Snoop Daniel. Now we invite you to stay tuned. Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Have a good weekend, Jeff Howe. You'll be at the ballpark, right?
I'll be there. Yep. All right. Looking forward to it.
All right. So we'll look forward to that. For Jeff Howe, I'm Craig Way. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. Church and Skins up next. We'll visit with you on Monday morning here on Light the Tower.